Thank you very much. What I want to talk about is an environmental aspect of nitrogen management in potato systems, nitrous oxide emissions, it's a greenhouse gas, and the opportunities to manage that. But also I want to look at the architecture of the potato system as a biological environment, because I think this is a really interesting example of understanding the structure of that environment and how we can use that to try to achieve greater efficiency in nitrogen supply and, in this case, reduce an environmental impact. Basically, we've been spending a lot of time over the last 4 or 5 years developing mitigation strategies for nitrous oxide reduction through fertilizer end management. There's numerous sessions at this meeting about that. And we're coming down to a fairly standard set of conditions that we need to consider in developing those strategies. Putting the nitrogen fertilizer at the right place, putting it on at the right time, using the right product, and at the right rate. And in this talk, I'm going to focus on two of those, right placement and right timing of fertilizer. But in terms of the potato production system, I'm going to add what I might suggest might become a fifth R, making sure you're using the right crop rotation. Because in the potato production system, the rotation is also an important aspect of understanding the biology of that system. So what I want to do is I want to explore what opportunities are there to reduce N2O emissions from the potato production system in Atlantic Canada. And again, this is a rain-fed system, a rotational potato system. So those are important things to keep in mind. One of the really interesting aspects of this system is the architecture of the system. It's a ridge furrow system where the ridge is formed at the beginning of the potato year as a result of using tillage to pile up basically the carbon-rich topsoil into a hill in which the potato seed piece is placed, and at least in Atlantic Canada, where the fertilizer is often placed. And that is adjacent to a furrow where the soil has been removed, so we're left with a soil that has a much lower carbon content, it has a much higher bulk density, tends to have a much higher water-filled pore space. So biologically, we have this really interesting juxtaposition of a well-aerated, carbon-rich, nutrient-rich, lower water-filled pore space environment immediately beside one which has higher bulk density, higher water content, lower carbon, lower nitrate. What are the implications for a process like denitrification and nitrous oxide emissions? What I want to do now is just examine some of the factors that control nitrous oxide emissions and denitrification within the context of this potato production system. So the first one's carbon availability. Carbon is what drives the system. Denitrification is largely a respiratory process. Carbon is the source of the electrons that drive respiration. One of the other important aspects of carbon availability is it's most often satisfied by oxygen supply. Most of the organisms in the soil are aerobes, so they're utilizing oxygen to satisfy their need for a terminal electron acceptor. The second controlling factor is aeration, the degree to which that oxygen is available to that population. So one of the really important things about the potato production system is aeration is largely controlled through the interaction of bulk density and water content. And particularly when you think about the differences in bulk density that exists within the potato hill versus the furrow, and also that water runs downhill into the furrow, we have a really interesting difference in water-filled pore space as a result of the bulk density and water content interactions. Well, this influences both the supply of oxygen to that soil to satisfy the need for terminal electron acceptors, but it also influences the ability of nitrous oxide to diffuse away from the site of denitrification and escape the system. Nitrate availability is also important, but it's not important in the obvious way. Nitrate is indeed a participant in the denitrification process, but in most agricultural soils, we seldom see nitrate as a major rate-controlling step in the denitrification process. Where nitrate becomes important is it influences the products of denitrification, whether they be nitrous oxide or molecular nitrogen. We find that in systems where nitrate accumulates, nitrous oxide reduction to N2 or molecular nitrogen is suppressed, and nitrous oxide becomes the dominant product of denitrification. So what nitrate does is it doesn't, again, necessarily influence the extent of denitrification. It influences the degree to which nitrous oxide is the final product, and that's an important consideration for us. Finally, the other consideration that we've often not talked about is the denitrifier community. And is the composition of the community changed in these two environments? And does that matter? If there is an environment where you think there might be a dramatic difference, the extremely wet anaerobic condition of the furrow relative to the more aerated, carbon-rich environment of the ridge, you'd think this might be one of them. So we wanted to ask the question, first of all, are the communities different, and does that have any impact upon the rates of emission? So again, reviewing this system, so we have a ridge with low bulk density, low water fill pore space, high nitrate, high carbon. Both the seed piece is there, the carbon from the topsoil is there, and the rhizosphere. And that's just adjacent to a high bulk density, high water fill pore space, low nitrate, low organic carbon environment. What do we see? I should also say I'm actually summarizing work that we've been doing over the last decade in Atlantic Canada from a whole variety of different studies. So there's a number of people that have contributed to this, including my co-authors. Basically, this is some work we did back in 2002, 2003. 2002 was a relatively dry year. 2003 was a relatively wet year. And that turned out to be rather convenient for us. If you look at denitrification, and here we measured denitrification using the acetylene inhibition method. So we used intact cores, treated them with acetylene to measure the rate of denitrification, not just nitrous oxide emissions, total denitrification. We find that denitrification in the dry year was higher in the furrow than it was in the ridge, whereas in the wet year, that additional carbon supply in the ridge and the higher water content allowed denitrification to be higher in the ridge than in the furrow. What about nitrous oxide emissions? Well, we see a very different story. And this was a little bit of a surprise to us. We found in both years, the predominant source of nitrous oxide emissions was indeed the ridge. Not that wet anaerobic furrow area, it was the ridge, which was a little bit of a surprise, particularly because some of the European work had suggested that no, it isn't indeed the ridge, it's the furrow where most of the denitrification should be occurring. Well, why this discrepancy? And I should say, while I'm presenting the data here from 2002 and 2003, we've had multiple field sites over the last decade where we consistently see this. The furrow is almost invariably has much lower N2O emissions than does the ridge. What's up? Well, one of our thoughts was, well, perhaps it's the nitrate. One of the things that we do in Atlantic Canada is we ban the nitrogen fertilizer in that ridge area, whereas in Europe, at least in the studies that are reported here, they actually broadcast the nitrogen after they form the hills, the ridge and furrow. So they have a more uniform distribution of nitrate. We have a more focused distribution of nitrate. In fact, one of our graduate students, Karen Gillum, actually looked at the role of nitrate in controlling the products of denitrification. And what she found is that looking at a range of nitrate additions from 0 to 1,000 parts per milligrams per kilogram of nitrate, there was absolutely no impact on denitrification, but there was a rather strong impact upon nitrous oxide emissions. Again, the more nitrate we had up to a point, it suppressed the reduction of that nitrous oxide to molecular nitrogen, and nitrous oxide became the dominant product. So we go back to looking at this data. We postulated that, in fact, what's causing this effect is the fact that since we do have the nitrate in the hill, banded in the hill, we're suppressing the conversion of nitrous oxide to nitrogen gas, and we're getting the higher nitrous oxide emissions, whereas in the European study, they're actually not seeing that effect. And the net effect of that is actually a positive thing, because by keeping the nitrate in the hill, we're avoiding or reducing its presence in the furrow area where there is these intense anaerobic conditions and a very high potential for nitrous oxide emissions. So if you look in the European study, very high nitrous oxide emissions from that furrow area. The net result is that across the total field basis, we actually have much lower emissions than they do under the European condition. So one of the mitigation options we're proposing here is that by banding the nitrate in the hill, putting it where the plant can get at it, we're avoiding some of the nitrous oxide emissions that might be associated with allowing it to get into the furrow and reducing overall field emissions. One of the other practices I want to talk about is the split application of nitrogen fertilizer. Again, we looked at the potential for The most common practice is to put all the nitrogen on at the time of planting, often rates as high as 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. We compared that to a situation where we placed 120 kilograms of nitrogen on at the time of planting and an additional 80 kilograms of nitrogen at the time of hill formation or ridge formation, for a total of 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And we saw, again, in those 2 years, we saw a consistent reduction in N2O emissions as a result of banding in the ridge, no effect in the furrow. But that effect was most dramatically expressed in the wet year. And that's because much of that moisture came in rainfall that occurred between planting and hilling. And so the greatest potential for this split application to reduce N2O emissions is when indeed there's a high potential for N2O production during the period from planting to hilling. We've also been looking at the effect of previous crop. This is work that Emily Snowden did as part of her master's, looking at a variety of preceding crops and how they might influence emissions during the actual production of the potato crop. So what's the influence of the previous crop? She looked at a variety of previous crops, barley, red clover, corn, soybeans, Italian ryegrass, and potato. And basically her conclusions, she actually presented this material last year at the ASA, preceding crop had an impact on N2O emissions, but emissions that are occurring during the potato growth period. So the previous crop had an influence on N2O emissions, primarily as a result of both the quality and the quantity of the residues that were being supplied. And one of the things she found is that she could explain a great deal about 60% of the total, can you see that? Yeah, 60% of the total variation or in nitrous oxide emissions by considering nitrate exposure, soil respiration, and water content. Nitrate exposure is an index we calculate where we take the area under the nitrate by time curve, and it measures the total exposure of the soil microbial population to nitrate over the entire growing period. We find it's a very effective way of removing the effect of sampling time on the influence of nitrate. Here's some work we did in PEI with John McLeod, looking at not only the previous crop, not only it supplies carbon and nitrogen to the potato crop, there's also emissions associated with the growth of that crop. Well, one of the other important aspects about the rotational sequence is the fact that, at least in this work, the barley crop and the red clover crop had much lower emissions than did the potato crop. So having those crops in a rotational sequence will reduce the net emissions of that entire production system. And the extent of those emissions, again, was well described by the index of nitrate exposure versus N2O emissions. Again, the lower nitrate exposure reflects the fact that during the growing of the barley and red clover crops, less nitrate accumulated over the growing period. What about the composition of the denitrifier community? Distinct differences, this is work that was done by Kathy Dundee and Sophie Wirtz at Fredericton. We did detect distinct differences in the denitrifier communities, and both in terms of the diversity and their abundance. However, these differences did not correspond to differences in the actual activities of denitrification or N2O emissions. And as a result, we've concluded that community composition and the expression of the denitrifier genes seems to be decoupled from the actual expression or activity of the enzymes. So it's an important attribute of understanding that system, but it does not seem to be controlling the actual rates of denitrification. So in conclusion, this ridge furrow complex, the anaerobic aerobic distribution of things, actually does create an interesting architecture that we can take advantage of in designing a nitrogen management systems to reduce emissions, in particular the placement of nitrogen fertilizer. Placing the fertilizer in that hill reduces the overall net emissions, even though it increases the emissions from the hill itself of nitrous oxide. The timing of the application, split application, does reduce N2O emissions, but primarily in years when there is moisture, sufficient moisture between planting and hilling. And finally, crop species in the previous year in the rotational part of the year is important in terms of influencing the potential for nitrous oxide emissions during potato production, primarily through its influence on carbon availability and nitrate availability. Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge all my students and scientists and graduate students and funding agents and celebrate collaboration. Sorry? We establish a 10 kilopascal concentration in the headspace. Yes.